This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
97.1 FM Talk, Dave Glover Show. Before we get to Paranormal Wednesday, very excited to have my guest on today. We are trying to raise $100,000 for Operation Food Surge through our Hardee's promotion. Last year, you guys really stepped up to the plate, and we were able to raise $75,000. If we can raise $100,000 by December 19th, that will buy $1 million worth of food for people in our community. Nothing leaves the St. Louis, Illinois metropolitan area. For people who are hungry and not getting enough nutrition, and you can have some fun by doing it. Go to any local Hardee's, ask them to donate to Operation Food Search. $1 will get you the DGS 2020 bumper sticker. Please give more if you can. And then we're going to be doing three live shows and two remote appearances between now and Christmas, basically. The first one is this Friday at the Mid Rivers Mall Hardee's, where you can get the new DGS sock caps, which are awesome, or the campaign buttons or the stickers. Bottom line is, enjoy great Hardee's food, give your money. Who is it? Was it Tom? Listener Tom?
Bob.
Yeah. Who issued a challenge when I said that if everyone listening gave a dollar, we'd be done tomorrow. We'd have $100,000 in the bank. And what did he say? Everyone give 10.
Dave said if everybody gave a dollar, we'd be done now. He said, that's not even enough. Let's do everybody give a dollar or everybody give $10 by the end of the week and call this thing.
Which
done.
Everyone could.
And it really would be. It's unbelievable to think that we're talking right now into these microphones. And if everybody that was listening to us by the end of the week went to a Hardee's and gave $10, we would raise millions of dollars worth of food. Because as we know from our friends at Operation Food Search, every dollar raised buys $10 worth of food.
Yeah. It's quite a bargain.
So it would be millions of dollars worth of food if just everybody listening to this show were to do that. That's mind-boggling.
I'm going to Hardee's for dinner tonight. I hope you guys will join me and donate more than a
dollar.
There's
$100. So. Right there. That's just in food sales.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, as you guys know, my favorite podcast is currently Sasquatch Chronicles, mm-hmm. and I was listening to an episode the other night with Kerry Arnold from Mississippi, and he has a show on YouTube called Bigfoot Odyssey, and I just loved his story. There have been some of the stories I've heard on Sasquatch Chronicles that I tap out of because I just don't believe the people. I feel like being a former attorney, I got a pretty good BS meter, and just like, okay, I'm not going to waste the next 2 hours in this guy. And Kerry is one of the first episodes I listened to, and I just believe him. Like, I don't know what he saw, but I believe that his description is accurate at what happened to him. I reached out to him. I texted him early in the morning one day and asked if he'd be on the show, and here he is. Kerry, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Hello, Kerry, you there?
Uh-oh.
Got to get him back on the phone.
Oh,
okay. No.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
All right.
We got it.
User error.
We
sorry,
got
Kerry.
It. Sorry. Our fault. Thanks, Kerry. So, Kerry, before we get before we get into your encounter, just tell us a little bit about Bigfoot Odyssey.
Bigfoot Odyssey is it's a channel we have on YouTube. It's kind of what it's grown into. We did travel documentaries, and we still do travel documentaries. We've made 12 up to this point. I'm actually editing the 12th one now. And we just travel all over the country, and we tell people's stories. The reason it's called Bigfoot Odyssey is we're telling their odyssey, is their journey through Bigfoot. It's not just people with encounters. It's a multitude like I said, a journey dotted with notable experiences. These people that have them either around their house or a lot of researchers that have had, you know, multiple experiences with this, with these creatures, because I believe that it lends more credibility if you can get to know the people telling the story better. So that's why we do it. And we have a live show that we do on the channel. It's called, it's on Bigfoot Odyssey channel, but it's called The Researchers Report. And we have researchers on from all over just coming on and telling their, what's going on in their area. And we end up talking about Bigfoot for an hour, sometimes an hour and a half. It depends on, depends on how things are going. But that's every Wednesday and Saturday at 7 o'clock p.m. Central. We're doing that tonight, actually.
Cool.
We'll be our 48th show there.
Well, everyone go out there and watch that if you're into paranormal. I know a lot of you are, especially Bigfoot like I am. Carrie, one of the things I've been impressed with listening to maybe 20 episodes of Sasquatch Chronicles is, and I've been sort of semi-obsessed with Bigfoot. I'm 55 years old, so I remember the Patterson-Gimlin on In Search Of and things like that. But I've been really impressed with a couple things. One is how big, tough outdoorsmen like yourself describe, and a lot of veterans, a lot of combat veterans, will say that their encounter with the Sasquatch, even if it lasted 10 seconds, was by far the most terrifying experience of their life. And second, how it changes their life, how so many people will have been dedicated outdoorsmen and just refuse to go back into the woods because of these encounters.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the problem is there's such a level of disbelief involved in it, even when you see it. And now you know this truth. So holding it in, it gets to be a really hard thing to do because it's a truth. It ends up surfacing in other ways, like it did with me, having anxiety, getting that washed over feeling, you know, just looking into the woods. So I think it's the problem is it's a truth that the better part of 9 billion people don't know, you know, whether they believe or not. Is one thing, but you know, when you get to see it, and I don't believe that as, you know, human beings, that we're emotionally equipped to handle seeing them. I know I wasn't at all. And I think therein lies a lot of the problem, and of course, ridicule and people not actually believing, you know, what you have to say ends up being a problem. So, it's as much of, it helps keep the creature hidden as much as the creature itself.
So one of the things I really like about Wes, who is the host of Sasquatch Chronicles, is that he just knows when to shut up. He'll just like ask you about your story and he'll shut up sometimes for an hour at a time. That's what I'm going to do. So if you will just tell us your encounter, and then I've got Tony and Rachel and Sue here who may jump in with questions as well, but just walk us through it.
Okay. Well, I'd hunted my entire life, you know, since I was 5 years old with my father. Around 1999, I had lost a lot of people really close to me, and I just kind of pushed myself away and just got off into the woods. Well, I'd found this piece of property through a friend who had fixed me up with his grandfather who owned the property. It was 240 acres, and nobody hunted it. Nobody ever even went back there. So I had a deal with him. You know, he didn't want anything. He just said, you know, go and hunt it and make it your own. Well, the deal I had, told him, you know, whatever I took out of there, I would process and give him half, which is what I did for the better part of 7 years. Well, at the end of the deer season, the 2006 deer season, somewhere around December, I'd gone off into the back of the property, down into this bottom, this big bottom wrapped all the way around it. And I'm off down there, and I'm trying to get, you know, the big buck. And it gets dark on me. And all of a sudden, this flock of turkeys gets up beside me. I mean, they get up right next to me, like 20 feet away, up to roost. Well, it scared the crap out of me, you know. But it was a light bulb moment. You know, now I know where the turkeys are, so I can set up and go turkey hunting, which I had only tried once. And that was when I first started going out there. I tried toward the front and didn't get any success. You know, I'd never even seen sign of turkeys out there until that day. So for a couple of months, I had prepared, you know, a spot in an area that I was going to turkey hunt when turkey season came around. So I did. I found this little area. It was probably half the size of a football field. And it was clear. And it was up on, like, a ridge line with the bottom running all around it, around one side of it. So I had burned it off probably a week before because turkeys like that. For some reason, I think it's the seeds pop or whatever. So the day I had prepared to hunt was March the 10th, 2007. I'd gotten in there pretty early that day. I'll park up at the house, and I'd offload my four-wheeler and drive around to down the side of the property, this little dirt road, into the leash road, which is just an old logging road. It's a terrible road. And that's where I would go in. And sometimes I would park in the front. Sometimes I would drive halfway in and park, just depending on what I was doing. Well, this particular day, I had parked in the front, got off, and walked in. It's about 800 yards. Because we measured it right at half a mile to where I was going to be hunting. So I think I had gotten in there probably just about daylight, and I'd cut some gallberry bushes and set them up. Like I said, if you look at this little piece of area like it's a football field, east to west will be the end zones. North and south will be the sidelines. Well, the south sideline drops straight off down into a creek bottom. It's like a two-tiered creek bottom. And then it kind of, you know, from west to east, it kind of shallowly grades up to the east and then around the little southeast corner of the end zone there and then up to the northwest end zone. Well, I'm set up on the north sideline in the northwest corner where I can look out. I'm looking straight out across to the south sideline and the southeast corner, and I can look in straight down the north sideline. There's this wide game trail that it had been used a lot. And I probably sat there for maybe a couple hours. I wasn't really hunting hard, but just out there, you know, enjoying the day. Well, if you turkey hunt, if anybody knows anything about turkey hunting, you have to hide. There's just no two ways about it. I mean, turkeys are not very smart, but if they see you, it's over. I mean, don't even blink. So I'm all camoed out. I've got net over my face, black grease paint under my eyes, a Recondo hat. You know, I feel like I'm hidden pretty good behind these gallberry bushes, my little stool. And I'm calling. I've got three calls. I have a chirp in my mouth, a reed. I've got a box call, and I have a locator. You shake this locator, and it sounds like a turkey gobbling. But it sounds like a young turkey. You know, young turkey, young males, or jakes, what they call them. When they gobble, they don't finish it. That's why you can tell the difference. So I'm hitting the locator, and then finally I start to get some action. I can hear other jakes gobbling back at me. I can't really see anything yet at this point. But I'm starting to get excited, you know, so I'm sitting there calling, trying to sound like, you know, a real sexy hen. So they'll come in so I can blast one, you know. And I finally get where I can see them, and I can see the ones in the front are, they look like jakes, but coming all through the woods are a bunch of hens and other jakes, young turkeys. I didn't see any big gobblers. Well, I'm getting, you know, kind of excited, so I'm getting hunkered down. I'm calling. They're coming up this game trail. And like I said, all through the woods. And the ones that I could see on the game trail, they probably get about 40 feet before coming into this little clear area. And they stop. All of a sudden, just stop, perk up, and then gone. They just exploded out of there to the north, to my left. Well, I mean, I'm obviously aggravated about what's going on. So I couldn't believe that they had seen me. So, just about the time that I can't hear them anymore, because that many turkeys, it was about 30. I could tell at that point how many it was, about 30 turkeys. You know, they're pretty loud. So, just about the time that I couldn't hear them anymore, I could hear what sounded like somebody, or sounded like footsteps, straight out across from me, down in that creek bottom. Well, in the bottoms there, it's all deciduous trees, and all, you know, the ridge lines in South Mississippi, are a lot of pines. Well, I stand up. Excuse me. When I stand up and I can't see anything yet, and when I finally do get to see who it is, it's a black guy. And, you know, the reason I make the distinction and it's pertinent is because the property belongs to a black family. The whole family lives up there on the road. Sons, daughters, nieces, nephews, the old man, grandfather that owns the property that I have to deal with. You know, and that's what I said. You see, just about from the neck up, he's down in that bottom. Made perfect sense. You know, it's one of them. It's probably 140, 150 feet away, through the thicket, through the bushes. So I'm upset because obviously this is what happened. You know, the turkeys have a direct line of sight to this person, you know, straight through the bottom there, and he scares my turkeys off. So I'm upset. And he looks like he's coming up to the edge. Like he's walking up, and he would snap his head and look at me. And then he would look back where he's going. And then he'd look at me and look back where he's going. So I'll wave my hand at him. Like, I'm not here. Don't shoot at me. I won't shoot at you. Never dawning on me, you know, how he knew where I was. And there was this big pine tree right behind me, like really, really big. And so I popped my back against it, you know, aggravated, put my right foot up on it, and I had my shotguns, Benelli, 3.5-inch, 12-gauge automatic. It was all synthetic. It was all black. And I had 3 shots in. I had the plug in. I had 3 high-res number 4 turkey shot. So I take my gun, and I put it down to my left hand around the grip, but I have my right hand up over the butt like a boat paddle, you know, just in a non-aggressive, you know, I'm not going to shoot at you position. And you know, a few times I see this person, and it looks like he's lumbering, like he's tired. He's struggling to get through, and he's walking from west to east, you know, down in that bottom. And I figured it's too steep right there for him to just climb up. Maybe eventually, you know, he'll find his way around. That's kind of what I was thinking, other than, you know, what am I going to say to him about him being out here? So he had to have walked away from me at some point, because the next time I can really see this guy, he's coming towards me straight up to the southeast corner. It's kind of a shallow grade. You know, it's still through the trees, and there's sage grass, you know, on the edge of the clearing there.
Hey, Kerry.
I didn't get burned.
Kerry, let's stop right there. We need to take a break, and it's a perfect place to stop because we're about to see Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Quick break, right back. We're with Kerry Arnold, who has Bigfoot Odyssey on YouTube. Go check it out. When we come back, we'll hear the rest of Kerry's encounter. Welcome back, guys. DGS 530, Paranormal Wednesday. My guest is Kerry Arnold, who has Bigfoot Odyssey, which he started after having his own Bigfoot encounter. Just to sum up where we've been so far, Kerry was leasing this land from a family, and if he would kill a deer, he would dress it, and he would give half the meat to this family, and he did this for about 7 years. He's out turkey hunting, and he's hidden, and he sees a bunch of turkeys coming, and then they just kind of take off, and they get spooked by something. He looks down into this little bottoms, a little hollow, here comes a person walking towards him, and he's frustrated because this guy scared the turkeys off. He's probably hunting himself. Now he's going to have some sort of awkward conversation with him. He's leaned up against a tree. He has his weapon down in a non-aggressive way. And Kerry, take it over from there.
Hey, Dave. You know, I can see him coming up toward me, and it looks like he's wearing camouflage, like a camouflage vest or something. And he doesn't look quite right to begin with, but, you know, I'm thinking he's about to be up close with me. I'm going to figure out what's going on with this guy. And it looked like a really fat, heavy black guy, like he had a bunch of clothes on. Like he had on coveralls, like a 400-pound guy, you know, kind of tall, with coveralls and a camo vest is what I was thinking. Because, I mean, I'm still looking through brush and bushes and thicket and trees and whatever. I mean, he's getting closer, and now I'm upset because if he's wearing camouflage, then he's hunting. And this has been my place, even if it is their property. Somebody should have told me this is how people get shot. you know, this is kind of the things that are going through my head, I suppose, at the time. And there are two pine trees, probably 10-inch pine trees, about 2 or 3 feet apart from each other, just down that grade towards between he and I, about 8 to 10 feet. Now, I had stepped off the distance from where I was to the edge of that clear so I would know how far, you know, what my distances were on my shot. And it was about 72 feet to the edge. That far corner was about 72 feet, which is where he was coming up. And he probably gets about 10, 15 feet from those trees, and he reaches his arm out. And he reaches his hand out to grab it, and what I see is skin. It's the dark gray skin on the inside of his bicep, because it was, you know, a lot less hair there than anywhere else. And I can see the hair hanging down. It's kind of hanging and swooping towards his hand, and he's got really long hair off his hand. Still doesn't register with to me that this is anything other than a person. But I thought it was strange, you know, thinking back on it, I realized that's what I was seeing. When he reaches his hand out and he grabs this tree and he pulls himself right up to it. I mean, puts that tree right in his right shoulder, his chest. And that's when he stood up, and he stood up and squared up, and he got a whole lot bigger than he looked actually coming up. And still thinking, you know, I think that was probably the moment of transition. These next few seconds where I was actually waffling back and forth between, you know, it being a guy. Once I finally realized that this is a Sasquatch, you know, this is what everybody has been seeing in the woods and calling a Sasquatch. Like I said, there's such a level of disbelief in it that I was trying to convince myself that this is a person. How's he doing this? You know, as soon as he stood up, he opened his mouth and started making the most unnerving sound I'd ever heard in my life. It sounded like multiple sets of vocal cords. But what I think it was language. I think he was talking because it seemed to have form and syntax and syllables, you know, like he was saying words. I couldn't understand it. But that was the moment, the true moment of true realization, you know, the moment that I knew exactly what this was. It was about 80 feet away from me. I can see very clearly what this thing is. And the feeling that I got, I describe it as someone pouring a bucket of cold water over my head. You know, a true sinking feeling, just pure dread. I could feel the blood rush from my face. It was that intense of a feeling. And he starts making this sound, and it's like he's talking. It's very demonic sounding. I don't mean that I think this is a demon, just to be clear. What I mean is it sounds like something you should hear in the movie The Exorcist or something like that. And I'm completely and totally mortified. And I guess, and I knew I didn't want to run. I knew better than to even try to run. But I'm holding my gun in this position, and I wanted to get my hand down on the grip because he's angry. He's mad at me. He is addressing me, something I have done has crossed the line, and he is upset. Well, I go to get my hand down on the grip, and he sees me doing this. And when he saw that is when he really got upset. And he started rocking back and forth, I mean, really fast. And he probably rocked 3 times, and he blew at me. Like, he didn't yell at me. It was like he huffed at me. But it was like he was saying no. It was like, oh, like, no, you know, you're not going to put your hand on that gun. And I think it hit me just about the time that I was getting my hand on the grip, and it hit me like a wave, like standing in front of a big speaker. You know, it shook me. It shook my organs and my spine. And I think that startling, you know, when I was startled, and it was enough for me to move, and I took about 4 or 5 steps off into that clearing, and I got ready because I felt like he was coming to get me. you know, I got all these things going through my head, you know, like people see these things all the time. They just don't ever live to tell about it. You know, these kind of things are, I'm worried because I'm so far from my four-wheeler. I'm 800 yards away. And I'm thinking, you know, if I do make it, I'm going to have to fight this thing all the way out of here. These are the kind of preparing for this, you know, is I've only got three shots, high brass number four turkey shot, which is nothing really to sneeze at. You know, I think if he gets close enough, I can probably kill him. But from this distance, you know, I'm just going to make him mad, and he's going to come get me, and that's going to be it. No one's ever going to know what happened to me. Well, once I got off out into this clear, and I'm holding my gun down to the left. I didn't point my gun at him. He stopped rocking back and forth. He rolled his lips back, showed all of his teeth, and stuck his tongue straight out. Just not at me, just out, like a point, like he was tasting the air or something, which I thought was bizarre. And I could see his teeth really good then. He had really long canines on the bottom and the top. Not really long, but longer than his other teeth. And he had a gap in his two front teeth, like a Michael Strahan gap. I'm 80 feet away from him. I can see everything clearly from just about the waist up, because there's this 2 foot tall sage grass in front of him. I can see some of his left hand. I can only see the tip of his fingers down to us because the hair is covering his hand, and I can't see his right hand at all. It's on the back of his tree that he's holding on to. But now that I'm out from under this tree that I was leaned against, I'm out from under the limbs now. I can see the top of the tree that he was holding on to. This was before he stuck his tongue out, and it was whipping. I mean, really whipping. Five people couldn't have done what he was doing to this tree. He wasn't doing it. He was just still holding on to it while he was rocking back and forth, and, you know, the tree was feeling the effects. You know, I think he could have pulled the tree out of the ground and thrown it at me, and that really scared me, you know, just seeing how powerful this thing was. His forearm was huge. It was the size of an NFL football. It was bigger than his bicep. You know, he was strangely out of proportion. Wasn't really muscled up like, you know, Schwarzeneggered up. He was like a fat, like barrel-shaped. He was as wide at his hips as he was at his shoulders. And his hair, what I thought was camouflage, was mud. It looked like mud. It might not have been. I don't know. But that's what it looked like. And it was all what I thought it was a vest, because it wasn't on his arms or his face. It was all over his body, mostly on his right side. And it was leaves and twigs. And, I mean, he was a mess.
Kerry, what did his face look like?
It looked like his nose looked like Scottie Pippen's nose. Pointed. It was wide, but pointed down to a point. Very, very wide mouth. Not particularly big lips, but not paper, not a thin slit, you know, like a chimpanzee.
Mm-hmm.
Very, you know, deep-set eyes, huge cheeks. Big bald cheeks, no forehead at all. His, you know, the heavy brow, and his brow was kind of diamond shaped. I don't know if that was because he was mad at me or if that was just the way it was shaped, but he was an ugly guy. He didn't look like that.
Kerry, let me ask you this. We've all seen Bigfoot represented over the years, whether it's the Patterson film or it's Harry and the Hendersons. Did this thing look more like the classic Bigfoot, or surprisingly not like the classic Bigfoot?
No, I wouldn't. I would say no. Classic, you know, what's the classic Bigfoot? Patterson Gimlin. I thought this was a person, but I mean, that was my frame of reference. I'd never seen a Bigfoot before. I didn't know what to look for, but I mean, this thing had a hooded nose. You know, this is not an ape, as far as I was concerned.
Hey, Kerry.
You know, this is human primate.
Hey, Kerry, it's Tony Colombo. If you had to guess, you earlier you said, you know, when you were kind of sizing up, and you've got a pretty good idea because of your knowledge of that, of the area and the land, and, you know, the perspective of how far something away is, so maybe how tall or how big it would be. You said earlier it kind of looked like a 400-pound man to you. What would you, what's your best guess at height and weight of the creature?
Well, I'm 6'4", about 240. He was standing down that grade, which was probably an 8 or 10-inch grade, and just about as tall as me. So he might have been 6'10", 7 foot tall, very tall, taller than me, wide, extremely wide, 400 or 500 pounds. Think Paul White, Big Show, the wrestler.
Yeah.
Built like that, except his head is sitting down in front of his shoulders. You know, his whatever that delts or trouts, whatever that is, the muscles.
You know, it's interesting.
Your shoulders up to your neck.
The way you talk about how he manhandled the tree, I don't know if you've ever seen this, Dave, or Kerry, if you have, but there's a really famous Bigfoot video that was out of Canada, I think, that was filmed by some loggers of, and the actual video without any enhancement is almost impossible to see because they're kind of shooting it through the fog. But once you clean it up a little bit, it's a video of a Bigfoot throwing a tree. Not like a huge, like you can't get your arms around it tree, but a decent size 30-foot tree with a, you know, the about the width of a softball maybe as the trunk, and this thing just rips it out and throws. Yeah. So is that kind of? I mean, do you think feel like that's what this creature would have been capable of doing if he wanted to?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely, he would have made short work of me.
Kerry, can you hold on through one more break?
Sure.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, come back, and Kerry will finish up his story of his Bigfoot encounter. If you want to hear more from Kerry, you can go to Bigfoot Odyssey on YouTube and watch his very well put together show about Bigfoot encounters. Welcome back, guys. Paranormal Wednesday, talking to Kerry Arnold from Bigfoot Odyssey. Kerry leased some land in Mississippi, hunted it for about 7 years, was turkey hunting. Something scared his turkeys off. He thought it was a big, giant guy. He's getting ready to have some sort of awkward confrontation or conversation with him, and it turns out that it's not a guy at all. It turns out to be what people have described as a Sasquatch, and Kerry is describing just how terrified he was and how giant this thing was and screaming with what seemed like, exorcist sort of multiple vocal cords and woofing at him and huffing at him. And Kerry, we have about 4 minutes left, so just take it from there.
Okay, well, at this point, we stopped doing all that. You know, he stopped the growling or whatever. He took his right hand off the tree, he turned his body to the right, and he cocked his head like a dog cocks their head when you whistle at him weird. And he looked right down his nose, across his shoulder at me, never took his eyes off me. He took probably 3 or 4 steps toward that game trail. I could still see him clearly. And then turned and walked dead away from me through the thickest stuff out there. Now, he could have walked clear down that game trail, but I think he walked through that thick stuff, so I guess I couldn't shoot him in the back or whatever. But he knew what the gun was. There was no doubt that he knew that that gun was not good. Well, I don't know. I'm still standing there in disbelief and mortified. And he probably got all the way down into the bottom. And that's when I heard him yell. And I guess he yelled because I was still standing there and I wasn't leaving. But it wasn't like the old Finding Bigfoot, that kind of yell. It sounded like, I describe it like it's a whip because it's very abrupt and like cracked at the end. But it's more like a baboon. Just like build up and then wow, like extremely loud. It was so loud that the woods were just completely silent after that. I can remember feeling just a little bit of wind. It was early March. And then I still stood there for a couple of minutes, a long time. And then I kind of got this rush came over me, and I can start to feel myself actually breathing. I'm taking long, deep breaths, and I can feel my heart pound out of my chest. And I guess I wasn't noticing it before. And so I turned around and I walked over and I grabbed my backpack. I left everything else laying there. I put my backpack over my shoulder and I started to walk out, and I was going to stop and take the plug out and put 2 more in, but I didn't want to get caught in that position because I'm not sure that I'm going to make it. I've got a long way to get out. So, I started out, and I would take short, quick steps, for about 1,500 feet and stop and listen. And then I would go again and start the whole way out. And I don't remember a whole lot of the way out, in particular, other than a lot of praying. I was doing a lot of praying. But the way the road goes, it right there at the end, it turns and goes up a hill, and there's, the side road where my four-wheeler is. And so I get start to come up that hill, it starts to open up, and I can see my four-wheeler. I'm really feeling good about getting out of there. And I get to the crest of that hill, and I stop, and I turn around. And as soon as I turn around, I heard the very distinctive sound of a tree break or a tree limb. But it was fresh, green, because it was that crackle pop, that pow. You know, it sounded like a rifle shot going off in the woods. And that's the point where I ran. I was about 200 feet from my four-wheeler. And I ran, I got on my four-wheeler, and I think that was probably the most scared I was, because the way I parked my four-wheeler, I couldn't go forward. I had to back up toward this thing that just broke, that I just knew he'd followed me out. And I got this far, you know, and now I'm not going to make it. But, I mean, I did. I backed out, and I drove up to the house, parked my four-wheeler side of the house. I got in my truck, I reached in the back, and I grabbed my 7mm Magnum. Looked and made sure it was loaded, because it usually was. And I sat there in the yard in my truck watching the back tree line for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, a long time.
Carrie, we have about 1 minute left, and I have a Bigfoot skeptic on my crew here. Sue, sweet as pie, but doesn't believe in Bigfoot. Sue, any questions for Carrie?
Carrie, let me ask you this. After having this encounter, then, do you feel like that was... there is a, like, this is a different species, and this species is throughout the country, and why then do we only have random spottings and with different descriptions?
Well, you're talking about a species, from what I've learned, that is predisposed to hiding. They don't just hide from us, they hide from everything, even in the dark. And you're talking, you know, people ask, why haven't we found a body? Well, I mean, that's an easily answered question. You're talking about a sentient being, self-aware, human intelligent, that is, like I said, predisposed to hiding, wanting to not be found out. Why would they leave one of their dead around for us to find? It's just not going to happen. But I had, these creatures were around me the whole time. I had so many strange things happen to me the whole time I was out there that I just explained away. But it all made sense once I saw this thing.
Carrie, unfortunately, we have to go. Yeah. Unlike the podcast world, we don't have forever, but I really appreciate you telling your story. How do people find you? Experienced YouTubers will know, but for the uninitiated, how do they find your podcast and your YouTube channel?
Just go to YouTube, type in Bigfoot Odyssey, ODYSSEY, and you'll go to videos and scroll down to the bottom, and you'll find our travel documentaries, and then you'll see the research reports dotted through there, and you can actually see my encounter that we filmed in the area where it happened and everything that happened, the owner that had seen the thing out there, and people are still experiencing these things out there in the same area.
Carrie, is there any way we could come down at some point? Do you do tours?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm gonna reach out to you tomorrow, because we want to come down and see it for ourselves. Thank you, Carrie.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.